So welcome everyone. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon or this morning from where I think it's probably this afternoon for everyone, I think. But it's good to see some familiar faces and also some new ones. It's a pleasure for me to chair this session with Philippe, who asked me to take over to kind of chair the discussion for this, which is Philippe's obviously latest book on UEFA. And it's quite funny that we have this discussion now in 2021, because I think Philippe and I have been discussing basically everything which you have now written in this for something like 10 or 11 years. So it's very fun to have this discussion after so many years of informal discussion, and we can actually take this to the next level also from an analytical point of view. So what I would like to do, the way we thought about presenting this session today, was not necessarily as a slide with Philippe taking us through, step by step, but more as a discussion through the book. So we wanted to make it somewhat interactive. So I wanted to simply present very quickly kind of some key themes around the book, and then we'll go as a dialogue. Philippe, I'll ask you some questions to take us through the story. And then I'd like to have a discussion as well on from a methodological and source perspective at the end, so we can kind of debate that a little bit. I think that might be fun and interesting for everyone. And then, of course, we'll have some time for questions and answers, which will be very, very rich. We're counting on your active participation today for this as well. So to begin, where do we begin? This is obviously, as many of you probably have seen this is a shortened version of Philippe's prior book in French, which is a little bit longer and provides a lot of the backstory for this. So we will dig into some of the material, which is not necessarily all in here in the Q&A and in the discussion. But I wanted, so that Philippe doesn't have to push his own book, I will promote it as well. It's always better that someone else promotes your work, right? So. That is done. Basically, we've articulated this around three big themes. And I think these are the key themes that would guide our discussion this afternoon. Philippe, you've created a structure around the history of UEFA under, let's say, three hypotheses, three questions, three themes. You know, there's the famous division of Gaul is divided into three parts. We know that from except for the small village of rebels in the Northwest. But three themes is a great way to approach this story. The first, which I think we can flesh out in the first few chapters, is the increasing exchange at the European level across all levels. So this is a core theme that, Philippe, you've worked through your entire text. And so that will kind of be a basso continuo, if I use a music analogy, to describe a bit of our discussion today. The second major theme in this book, it seems that you've articulated, is overcoming Cold War divisions. So the entire divide between East and West, and I think you've done that quite interestingly in contrast with other European institutions, which are quite distinctly defined into East and West. Your argument is that UEFA is bridging that. So you are obviously a perpetual optimist, I think. And you're because the book is creating a united Europe. It's not discussing the divisions. So we'll discuss as well, maybe perhaps your own visions on the politics of Europe there. But I think this is where there will be some interesting relationships with other comparative work that looks at other cultural movements across Europe, whether it's dance, theater, which have been also bridging that Cold War divide. So I know you've referenced some of that, Philippe. We'll discuss that as we go on. Maybe one question I'll ask you as to think about is: are you arguing, in a sense, for a UEFA exceptionalism in terms of being different from the political sphere? Something we can debate a bit afterwards. Your third point, and then we'll kind of guide into the Q&A discussion, is your argument is, well, why was UEFA founded? And I think one of the key messages you're coming across is that there is a continental debate going on between the Americas and Europe. There is a reorganization of institutions at the international level in Europe. And there is this push to decentralize institutions after the Second World War. So those are your three kind of key themes that I think we will certainly develop over the course of this discussion. And the way you've done this, Philippe, is I think quite nicely. You've done it in two parts, between 1949 and 1953, and 1954 to 1961. So there are a number of key issues that are running through this. We have the construction of a transnational market. We have politics, decolonization, which is obviously a key theme in certain aspects of what you've discussed. You've talked about the economics and the regulation of sport, the role of the media, and institutionalized bureaucracy. So perhaps let's begin with the first part of the book, Philippe. The initial chapter, I'll skip over the introduction to begin with, but chapter two, which is, you know, entitled Reorganizing Football. Can you describe to us a little bit, what is the context here? This is 1949 to 1953. What is happening? What is going on in this reorganization? You discuss different aspects, competitions. I think you even situate this in a broader political sphere with the Khrushchev thaw, looking at broader political trends. But you've discussed in this point the reorganization of European football at this point. Could you guide us through a little bit what is going on? What are the key themes, key tensions in this European movement?
Yeah, okay.
We can hear you.
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for this introduction. Thank you to have accepted to discuss with me about this book. I also like this idea to have more discussion. So I've for the audience, I've also put some photos, some maps that could also help to illuminate my purpose. So to answer to your question, of course, after the Second World War, European football was in a difficult time. FIFA still exists because it was not easy to think that after Second World War, FIFA will survive to the war. Many international federation has collapsed with the Second World War. So, but of course there were a lot of tensions. I think Nicolas Betti has shown this with Italy. Other scholars have also deal with the case of Germany. Notably Henri Wallick, Isser Dichter. So it was very difficult. So the first steps, I think, was to think it was necessary to recreate like a community of European, inside European football, because my point was to say that during the interwar period, notably around FIFA General Assembly or FIFA action, there were like the creation of a community of European football leaders. So the goal was to recreate this community, but so how deal with the case of Italy, how to deal with the case of Germany that didn't exist anymore. So the Federation of Germany didn't exist anymore. And also the beginning of the Cold War. So of course, it was not so easy. So that it was the first challenge, I think. And you have probably some football leaders of this epoch that wanted to find perhaps another way to recreate this harmony in the community. I think the second point was also how to deal with new context of European football. Because despite the fact that during Second World War, European football was under pressure, very quickly in some countries at the beginning of the 50s, you have the development of football and particularly a new steps in professionalism. And this new step of professionalism helped notably to develop some structures. We have here in the audience Julian Rick, and I know that he is working now on the edification of Santiago Bernabeu Stadium that happened since during this decade, for instance. You have also the new leaders in some clubs, for instance, Bernabeu, but also others that want to create new competition, for instance, take a new project. And so you have finally the leaders in national association in FIFA that have to face to this new context. And this new context probably also need a new discussion, perhaps new vision of football, because of course, if you create new competition, it is necessary to discuss about some topics like referee, like the problem of agenda, like, you know. So I think you have these two aspects. The first is the political aspect, and the second, it's more around what's happened in football field itself, and notably the new steps of professionalization in some countries.
That's perfect, Philippe, because in a sense, you're describing we have a situation post-war where there is a new vision, a new group of individual political leaders in the sporting sense. What I'd like to ask you as a follow-up question to that is, and this will hopefully allow you to explain the next chapter, okay? You've talked about one vision, a new community. To what extent is that vision shared across all of the continent? And I think that is, in a sense, the focus of your next chapter in the chapter three, which is the beginnings of a Soviet bloc inside of football, challenges from South America, etc. So to what extent is this new vision shared by everyone or contested?
Yeah, well, I think, and it is perhaps I think a little bit sad, or it's a pity in the English version that it is more difficult for probably for the reader to see this, that in the French version that begin in the 30s. And one main point of the French version is to say, okay, how is it possible to overcome the Cold War? And one response is to say, things that happened in the 50s already began in the 30s, you know. So, of course, you have the Cold War, but European exchange in football already exists before. And in this matter, of course, you have already some leaders that felt that, okay, now we have had the war, after we have the Cold War, but football during the 30s was really a place that that regrouped many European countries. So we want perhaps to do this again. We are, and it is also one point to say, they said we are apolitism. We don't follow politics. And my point is to say, okay, some of them perhaps think about this, but it is more a strategy. But we can also discuss later about this. Mm-hmm. But what is perhaps new? You have also new leaders that merge, you know, and notably inside FIFA. And leaders as Stanley Roos, as the Englishman, as Ernst Thomann, the Swiss, as Ottorino Barassi, the Italian, and this frees this trio, because they were also friends and very well connected. They met each other very often during international games. They travel a lot. These new leaders, I think, took importance at the end of the 30s, beginning in the 50s. They are very important in their national association, and they took importance inside FIFA. And just an example of this, when you have Ivo Schricker, the FIFA general secretary, that said, okay, I leave FIFA, because he was, I think, 70 at this time. During 8 of 10 months, you don't have any really the general secretary at FIFA, and it is this trio that deal with the administrative part of FIFA, and they hired a friend of Ernst Thoman, Kurt Gassmann, to come and to help them to do the job. And it is very interesting, because it is not the executive committee that decides this, but of course the executive committee know and discuss with this trio, and this trio is not really part of the executive committee. It is later that Barassi and then Thoman will be hired in the executive committee. Look, it shows their power on the organization. And I think these three new leaders have new ideas, and they realized that it was probably not possible due to political issue, due also probably to these new steps of football that I have described before. It was not possible to go on like this, and you have to do something new, something more, and perhaps to create a European organization, because, and it is my last point on this, during the interwar period, FIFA could be seen as a European organization, because, of course, you have already a South American federation, but the majority of the FIFA member came from Europe. And after the Second World War, and perhaps we can discuss this later, you have new members, you have more and more extra-European countries. And I think Barassi, Thoman, and Roos, they understood that you have to change something, and perhaps to create a European organization. And on this point, I think they found some support, and notably in Henri Delaunay, the French general, the secretary of the French Federation, José Crae, who was also an important member of the Belgium Federation, and very important person. So, of course, not all share this idea, but with the time, you know, they manage, I think, to convince more and more people that it was important to change, to decentralize FIFA.
Thank you, Philippe. This actually flows quite nicely, in a sense, to what you mentioned about South America, because at this point in time, as you've described in the book, there is a growing tension between the political representatives of South American football and the mainly European-dominated FIFA. And you've also described how the institution FIFA itself is essentially run as a little gentleman's club by friends, right? And there is a search at this point for what you've called a new model. And you've looked back and you said, well, they're in part at this point in the late 40s and early 50s, the leadership in Europe is saying, well, we need to find a new model to represent European interests. And so where do they look? Of course, they look on the other side of the Atlantic. And so maybe you could take us through a little bit about how this model is, on the one hand, an inspiration, and on the other hand, also a source of tension and pressure in the reorganization and in the reform of FIFA, and how that is absolutely fundamental to the creation of an actual European body.
Yeah, it's really a great question. I will just put just this graph. I think it's very perfect. Important. But first, of course, it's the creation of the building of a European organization, and in probably our own national or European thinking, we will preliminary focus on what European have done. But as this European organization that have, and we will discuss this later, creating in 54, is connected with the decentralization of FIFA, we have to understand this in relation with the international. And what is fascinating in this history, I'm also inspired by transnational history, by also this, all these studies that try to provincializing Europe, you know. So to see that we don't have to forget that South American Confederation is 50 years, is created 50 years earlier than UEFA. So when European leaders discuss about the possible creation of an organization, you have already something that exists. You have already this confederation, and this confederation already organized, for instance, a continental competition, already has discussed about some topics to perhaps improve the development of football or the management of football in its continent. And to be honest, we don't know a lot about the Confederation, South Confederation history, because as you know, we don't have really an history that exists. We have commemorative books, we have perhaps one or two papers that deal a little bit, but we don't know more so about this. And it's a pity, I think, because it's a wonderful history. But what's happened during the 40s is that the South American Confederation fosters its power, you know. And you have during the 40s, you have all the countries from South America that are member of the Confederation. You have also like a block of South American federation that exist in FIFA. So for the first time, you have during the General Assembly, a member that said, okay, in the name of the South American Confederation, I said that, I wanted that, or we wish this. So it's important. So it showed to the others that you have like a regroupment or like a block that exists. And in 1948, you have the executive committee of FIFA accepted that South American leader is directly elected in the FIFA executive committee. So it's important.